For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Having a baby is one of the most joyous experiences a woman can have. But those of us who have been through it know it's also very hard work and it can be very dangerous. The maternal mortality rate, that's the rate of women who die during childbirth, is alarmingly high in parts of the Pacific. According to World Population Review, the rate in Papua New Guinea is 192 deaths in every 100,000 live births. Compare that with a country like Australia, which is just 3 in every 100,000 births, and you'll be shocked. The reasons for these deaths vary. There's the geographical barriers and lack of medical services, and there are also cultural barriers. But measures are being taken to address these limitations and help save the lives of women in the Pacific. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about the risks of childbirth. In 2024, Marshall Islands saw 7 women tragically die in childbirth. Considering the population is less than 38,000, that is an alarmingly high number of deaths. Sisters Let's Talk producer Kim Lester spoke to Marshall Islands Health Secretary Francine Wasser-Jeklik about the barriers women face when giving birth there.
It's largely due to geographical and cultural barriers that prevent women from seeking timely care. In these isolated areas, the women often face challenges accessing emergency care and also a cultural hesitation towards male health assistance further exacerbates the problem. In the Outer Islands, majority of the healthcare providers are male. We have 54 health centers, and majority of the health centers, they are equipped with a health assistant. And majority of the health assistants in the Outer Islands, is in the Aramaya at least, they are males. And I believe, much of the hesitation from women going and seeking care is because of the cultural hesitation. While we've made some progress in a lot of areas, the rate continues to be a significant challenge. To prevent some of these challenges that we see, we've already taken, extra steps to address this. We launched a maternal child health aid training program, and we've certified 17 women, or they just completed their first tier of their maternal child health training program to assist the male health assistance in the neighboring islands. I believe this is an innovative program and promising approach to overcoming the cultural barriers and preventing women from seeking care. So these female health aides will help ensure that every woman, no matter where she lives, can access maternal health services with dignity and comfort. Transportation for emergency care is also another concern that we also need, because the only two modes of transportation for us is air and sea. And if weather permits, we may be able to, deploy our sea vessels or, the air transportation is, there are times that it does not work properly. So timely response is also of an issue that we want to make sure that it's improved.
So if women are reluctant to go to these health services, where are they birthing, and what is the planning process for women who don't want to use the health services to give birth?
Yeah, oftentimes, if they don't come to the health center, there's a traditional birth attendance at home or family members that they do in the neighboring islands. And for the urban centers, we have 2 urban centers, which is Major and Mibai, so they come here. But there are oftentimes that when there's emergencies, there's medevac. So we use the air transportation to bring them back to either Madrid or Dubai to seek better care.
What are the outcomes for the babies in terms of when women aren't able to seek hospital care or health care?
It can result in significant negative outcomes for both mothers and their babies. And, you know, one, it can be high neonatal mortality. And it's one of the key performance indicators that, you know, we're also addressing and monitoring. And without access to a skilled birth attendance and better care, you know, the concern to work could have been manageable to life-threatening situations. There's also the issue of malnutrition and birth issues. Right now, RMI has this early childhood development or ECD program, which is supported by the World Bank, where we're addressing stunting, and a lot of it is on nutrition. So the lack of access to healthcare also means that the babies are at risk of not receiving proper nutrition, both in utero and after birth. So poor maternal nutrition during pregnancy can lead to low birth weight, which in turn makes the babies more susceptible to illness and developmental delays. After birth, you know, if the mothers don't receive adequate support for breastfeeding, or if there is a lack of access to nutritional supplements, you know, we know that, you know, they may suffer from malnutrition. So I think, you know, the stunting issue involved in the RMI is of concern, and we're addressing this by institutionalizing programs to adjust it.
Who do you most need to hear this conversation? Who is this message for the most?
This message is for all of us. We have a saying in at the Ministry of Health here in RMI, Kumudi Ejimil, which translates to health is a shared responsibility. I would like for women, you know, to the women, I want to tell them that your health is your strength.
Mm.
There's a Marshallese proverb. It says, Jineri Lokobun, and it means that woman holds her child close to her for warmth and protection. So the women, you know, you are the nurturers of our future generations and your health matters. So take control of your well-being, seek regular care, and don't let these cultural taboos stop you from accessing services you deserve. You are not only protecting yourselves, but your children and the future of your nation. And this message is also for our leaders, you know. This is a critical call for action. We need to continue supporting innovative solutions like maternal child health aid program. We need to invest in our healthcare infrastructure. And every woman, especially the outer islands, has access to safe and timely care. Maternal health is not just a woman's issue. It's a national priority. And we all must act together to break down cultural barriers and improve emergency response systems and ensure no mother is left behind. So I hope this community agenda reminds us that we all must work together in my nurturing and supporting the women. Just like, you know, we say, you know, it teaches us that we are not only protecting our mothers, but ensuring the strength and well-being of our future generation.
That's Marshall Islands Health Secretary Francine Wasser-Jeklik speaking to Kim Lester.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
The maternal mortality rates in Guam and Micronesia are also disturbingly high, but a group called the Birth Workers of Colour Collective is working to make things safer for women. Stevie Merino Mesa, the founder and executive director of the collective, is a doula, which is a non-medical support for women during pregnancy and labor to help them navigate an under-resourced system. Now the group is training more doulas in Guam and Micronesia to try to reduce the deaths of children and mothers.
In Guam, there's one hospital that most people go to, and there are about 7 OBGYNs, and that number shifts throughout the year. And so on average, most people are not seeing or receiving prenatal care until after they're in their 25th, 26th week pregnancy. And on other islands in Micronesia, it's really going to depend on the access, right? And so if they're in more isolated areas, it might be more difficult to get to a care provider to be seen. And so really across Micronesia, we're seeing that issue of lack of care, lack of access, lack of resources, and then also just lack of medical providers in general.
Why is it so difficult to access treatment?
I think that the isolation, like geographical isolation, is one of them. I think that the U.S. territory status for places mm-hmm. like Guam really contributes. A lot of the resources that should go to the actual population, including the indigenous population, the Chamorro people, are being diverted into other areas. And so that definitely plays a huge role. But I think the lack mm-hmm. of providers plays another. You know, we see environmental catastrophes like hurricanes, typhoons, et cetera, that are also playing a huge role in just health conditions in general. Currently, there is an environmental catastrophe with the water on Guam in one of the villages there. People can't even boil the water. That's how dangerous it is. And so if we're thinking about the ongoing health impacts of that, right, on the entire population, but especially the most vulnerable, like pregnant women, like infants, young children, what are the reproductive health outcomes and impact? And so all of that plays a huge role in why care is so inaccessible, why so much of these disparities are continuing to increase, why they're so much higher than national trends, and so on and so forth.
And what is the role of the doulas that you train?
Yeah, so the role of the doulas is to really provide culturally specific care, but also advocacy, education, and support. The way that our doulas are trained are coming from a very specific cultural context, right? And so making sure that people understand that we want to bring in this evidence-based care and education and help them to navigate places like the hospital or care providers while also being able to bring in their cultural traditions and practices or beliefs. So one of the things that we've encountered in our years of doing this training and of doing this kind of work is we might have someone who is from one of the islands in Micronesia, and they're going to their provider saying, oh, I'm taking this tea that my grandmother has made and it's been in our families for generations. And then the provider will say, that's stupid. You could kill your baby. And it's just like, why is that the first place that we go, right? That a medical mm-hmm. provider would go? Because what happens after that? Either the person is not going to be honest with what kind of care they're receiving or what kind of supplements or teas or whatever it may be they're taking. Or it might be that now they stop taking it and now there's rifts in the family, right? And so we want to really be able to train our doulas to advocate for their clients to have culturally competent and relevant care, but also to be able to support them in navigating that as well. And then on the advocacy end, it's advocating for services in language, making sure that the provider, either there's a translator or the provider is able to translate in the language that they speak, that it's not a family member, it's not a random employee who maybe doesn't have the ability to translate in a way that the person would understand. And essentially that they're able to be treated with dignity and respect, regardless mm-hmm. of their background, their identities, all of those things. So many people, unfortunately, are not aware of the pregnancy process or what their options are in birth. A lot of us have lost a lot of connection to traditional practices, cultural practices. And so being able to know what the options are and to make decisions based off of being educated and knowing, like, just because something is common doesn't mean that it's the best option for them. But in whatever it is that they choose, that they have someone there to support them who is knowledgeable about this process and can really be that village that we talk about so often.
Exactly. And Stevie, how do you think doulas can contribute to improving outcomes for mothers and babies?
Doulas are not medical providers. And so we're able to provide that support, right? Those things that I mentioned, the village, the care, the education, the advocacy, being able to relate in different ways. And, you know, there's a lot of beauty in talk story and sharing experiences and breaking bread over food or whatever it may be, right? But the other piece is that doulas are a really low cost way to provide support. We don't replace doctors or medical providers, but we're able to help them navigate this process, to navigate their care, to advocate for them to receive care faster. On Guam, we've been doing these things called village educationals, where we're doing free prenatal education classes for the community and for the different villages. And when we have someone who's like, oh, I haven't been able to see a doctor and I'm 27 weeks, we've been able to try to help them navigate that experience. Or even if they're looking for maybe mental health resources, just different things of that nature, a doula can help be that bridge and that resource to network and connect them to other services as well. I think a big piece of this, though, is that doulas are being seen as this like life-saving force. And it's like, we're not that. We don't want to be that. We know that we need more providers. We need more resources. People need more access to clean water and so on and so forth. But doulas are one part of the solution.
And you've touched on this already, but can you spell out a bit more how important it is that families receive support that is culturally relevant?
Research literally shows that for some people, when they have support that reflects them, positive health experiences increase. That alone, like, we're having overwhelming health disparities outside of pregnancy and birth and postpartum, but especially during those times. If a doula who is a support person is able to be that cultural mirror or reflection, and that can increase their positive experience, that alone makes it worth it, right? But for our doulas, some of them also are bringing in their own skill set. So we have some elders, Micronesian elders, who maybe are able to talk to the families, able to basically be the doula for that entire community, right? We have people who are able to bring in, maybe they make more traditional or cultural foods, and so they're able to nourish their clients in that way and give them resources on, here's how you're able to access food that is healthy and that is culturally, you know, relevant or whatever it may be. But that cultural piece plays such a huge role in what we've seen really decrease the overwhelming disparities in maternal and infant mortality, but also just disparities across the board. You know, one of the things on islands like Guam, for instance, cardiovascular or like heart-related conditions really increase maternal mortality, which increases infant health disparities. And so if people are less stressed, if people are supported, if people are seeing these different avenues and approaches to care that isn't necessarily so medicalized and oftentimes out of reach for what folks are able to understand, or maybe there's not enough time to explain it, a doula is able to sit with them and have those more one-on-one, longer conversations to really explain what it is and also share what the options are as well.
Can you share a specific experience where having a doula made a significant difference in the outcome of a birth?
Yeah, so one of the clients that I've had, you know, we basically went to the hospital after a couple of days of her laboring at home. Everything is going well. She's basically ready to birth this baby. She does, and she did amazingly. And then all of a sudden, I see that she turns really pale within like seconds. And I'm looking at the doctors, I'm looking at her, I'm seeing if anyone is paying attention. Mind you, all of this is in less than a minute. And so the reaction time was very fast. And I spoke up and was like, I think that there is something wrong. And they're all talking, you know, they're talking about the baby, like the birth. They hadn't seen a birth that was that fast and, you know, all of those things. And I'm like, I think something's wrong. And essentially, when I got their attention, she started hemorrhaging and she was losing a lot of blood. And that just extra person who was able to observe, who was there as her one-on-one support person, made that huge shift.
Stevie, how are the doulas training healthcare providers?
The doulas don't necessarily train healthcare providers. We do communicate and we do offer trainings and we try to connect and partner with them. For us, that's very important, right? We understand that we don't have to be adversaries. We're not there to take over their position. We're not there to discourage people necessarily from the hospital if that's their choice. We understand that we need all of us in order to really like battle this overwhelming disparities that exist for our communities and for our islands. And so for us, one of the things as an organization, myself as an executive director, is going to make sure that we are meeting with all the OBGYNs, that we're talking to all the nurses, that we are talking to the medical students, and we're doing workshops and we're talking about the work of a doula. We're explaining what doulas are. We're talking about doulas as basically non-medical interventions, that we are another alternative or addition to what is currently happening that's really not working, right? As we're seeing this growing disparities happen, as we're seeing more and more people dying from things that are preventable, how can we bring in this additional tool, right, and resource, which doulas are? And so we have a lot of these conversations. We meet with the providers on Guam. We've met with midwives in Saipan and other providers throughout the islands. And for us, that's a really important part of our collective. The other piece is we want doulas to be welcomed into these spaces and seen as an essential part of the care team and not just as a visitor or as this nuisance, right? But as someone who is playing a really vital role and is important to that patient. And so we're really intentional about that. A lot of the people in our collective, our doulas, they are medical professionals. One of the people who teaches at our Village Educational, she's a doula, but she's also a nurse. And so, you know, we make sure that we have a wide breadth of people who are cultural practitioners, who are artists, who are healthcare providers, who are community members, elders, who are training to become doulas, whether they practice or not. These are skill sets and knowledge that traditionally most people had. Like, we had some understanding of birth and pregnancy and helping to raise children. And for a lot of us, that's been lost. And so for us, this work, I know the term doula is very like new for a lot of people, but culturally, traditionally, we've had someone who's supported, and we're really trying to reclaim these traditional practices in a way that is now meeting where we're at as, you know, accessing medical care and all of those different things.
How many doulas from the Birth Workers of Color Collective are there in Guam and Micronesia?
As of our last training in August, we've trained about 48 doulas. Which for us is such a, we're so proud of it, because in 2023, before we did our first training, there was one doula on island. And now there are dozens of doulas, many of which are indigenous, many of which represent the different islands of Micronesia and are able to provide that culturally competent care.
That's Stevie Merino Mesa from the Birth Workers of Color Collective.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
I mentioned earlier that Papua New Guinea's maternal death rate is 192 per 100,000 births. But because it's so difficult to collect data in a country like PNG, that number could be much higher. One of the biggest challenges in PNG is the geographical isolation, which means health professionals are working in remote places. A few years ago on Sisters Let's Talk, we met Sherilyn Polomon in our episode on birth trauma. She is a midwife from Papua New Guinea who now lives in Australia, where she's completing her PhD. She started a WhatsApp group for midwives, nurses, obstetricians, and other healthcare workers to give them a forum for getting information through in emergency situations. The group has more than 700 members. I caught up with Sherilyn again to find out how it's helping to save lives in PNG.
I saw the need of having them being supported, knowing that most of the time they work alone. And when they encounter complications, it's quite challenging for them, especially if they are newly, you know, just graduate from a school of nursing or a school of midwifery and sent out to rural. So I thought, let us help form this forum so that we can support our newly graduate midwife and also use the forum to learn from one another. Over time, nurses and midwives in rural reach out when they encounter complicated cases. And we have complicated cases like women who give birth and then they bleed. It's called postpartum hemorrhage. We also have nurses and midwives reaching out for help to manage preeclamptic laboring women. And in no time, senior midwives and obstetricians reach out to assist and to support them in managing the case. I've seen midwives in rural health centers, especially in places where there is no road and it takes days, which recently we had cases where they have to reach out because the only way to get out from that health facility is by air. And so when they reach out, one of our senior midwife on the forum quickly reach out to those in the province. And by the time they reach out, they negotiated for the referral. And so the woman was referred sooner to the hospital. The delays in referrals are the cause of maternal mortality. Not only that, women don't come to our facilities to receive care, but from the facility to the tertiary facilities. If a woman comes to the health center and are not sent out or referred to the hospital, if that case has to be managed at the hospital and there's a delay, we can lose lives. So this forum has assisted in terms of connecting and getting referral on a timely basis by communicating with the people on the ground so that there is referral, efficient referral.
Sherilyn, what can be done to make healthcare more accessible for pregnant and birthing women in PNG?
We have issues with our setting. Just the geographical setting has already placed us far to reach the health facilities. We may have a health facility that is 3 hours, 4 hours walk away from the women. And if there is a flood or if there's anything along the way, women can't reach the health facilities. And so I think maybe we are now into this digital world where I think to improve maternal health and with this current trend of the WhatsApp, I'm thinking having a connectivity system, connect all the facilities, allow internet services. Now, one of the challenges we have with our group is most time the poor rural health nurse will have to go out and look for internet to communicate with us because there's no internet services in the labor ward. And so we have to wait. Like, they may need the response sooner, but they can't receive the response because they have to go out and send in their message and then come back and read, observe the mother and then go back outside to communicate with the rest. So one of the things that I think should improve the health system in the country is to have connectivity. If we cannot connect PNG through the physical infrastructures, connect PNG to internet services. And if we have provided this evidence that if we can connect our health workers from rural remote areas and save lives, and internet, shows that we can do that, why not invest in internet services, invest in technology, and let's connect Papua New Guinea through internet services than waiting for infrastructures that will never happen.
That's Papua New Guinean midwife Sherilyn Polomon. Thanks to my guests today, Sherilyn Polomon, Stevie Marina Mesa, and Francine Wase Jacklik. There are so many challenges to being a woman in the Pacific, And it's heartbreaking that accessing safe labor is one of them. But I'm glad to learn there are people and groups out there making a difference. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu Inga Stunsna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Amtasol na lukimu next time.